Dead's on.
Blog 301
is
radio.
On. 301 is on? Cool.
Yeah.
That music can only mean one thing. It is time once again for the worst 90 minutes in soccer podcasting. That's right. It's the Two Guys Soccer Show. Except there's never only two guys. We got to work on that. We really, really, really do. I mean, that's just false advertising. You come on, you listen to the show expecting to hear two guys talk about soccer, and then there ends up being like three, four. Who knows? Half the time, I don't even know who's going to be on the show, and I'm running it. Organization. It's paramount. That's right. I'm Mike. He's Stead. Stead, how you doing this week?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. Doing all right. Just trying to, get one day at a time. Moving on to the next. Kind of a dead weekend for me, football-wise, at least from a fan perspective, but happy to be on.
Yeah, we'll talk about what did or really did not happen over the week. There were some CONMEBOL Bowl qualifiers in your UEFA Nations League. I'm still, after all the research that I've done, not sure what that is. Maybe this gentleman can help. London Sean, how are you doing this week?
I was doing well, Mike. I was doing well up until a couple of days ago.
That sounds like a really bad connection.
Oh, does it? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear
you. Oh, I couldn't hear him. Maybe it's just me. Okay.
Yeah, are we back home?
Now we are. There we go. Now
okay.
You sounded like you have been put through an electronic blender on my end temporarily.
Yeah, I feel like I've been put through an electric blender as well. Yeah.
Well,
I was doing fine until a couple of days ago, and then I had this really, really bad nightmare. Woke up in a complete sweat. I was dreaming that I was at Wembley in the stands watching England win, and then I was leaving with all the fans, and everyone was turning around to each other saying, "What have we won? What have we won?" So, like you, Mike, I have no idea what this Nation League thing is, but hey, at least we got a win.
I think we may have another Brit hanging out too. Will, you with us?
I am with you, and I'm feeling much the same as you and Sean.
You know what? I want to give the young man credit. He's cutting class tonight to join the podcast. Those are priorities, right?
No.
So Sean wakes up in the middle of the night, and Will's cutting out on class. Then did you ever think we would be this important?
Yeah, for real, man. We're coming on up.
Like the Jeffersons, moving on up. Yeah, I'm not going to do that again. That just did not work for me. Anyway, so let's start with this, because we have plenty to talk to on the back end of the show about things not going on the pitch. So let's talk about what happened. Big story from the weekend. Newsflash, Wembley Stadium. Nations League. Down number one team in the world. Beats Belgium 2-1. Sean, is there anything even remotely to take away from that game on yesterday?
Which game?
England and Belgium.
No, I'm joking. Yeah. Anything to take away from the game? England B team is better than Belgian B team. That's pretty much my takeaway.
It was a very, very odd starting lineup. And on the whole, I watched this one. I watched France and Portugal. And a little bit of the Germany-Ukraine game. Now, the Germany-Ukraine game was a little more, I guess, intense than the other one, simply because Germany had yet to win a game in a competition. I mean, in this competition. Imagine a soccer competition that the Germans have not won. Not only have they not won it, they haven't won a game in it yet. But these games, by and large, just lacked a certain they were even friendlies. There was just no intense – there just didn't seem to be any intensity. England gave away an early penalty, and for most of the first half just looked like they were getting battered by Belgium. Right before the break, Marcus Rashford, who was awarded an MBE for his charity work in the Queen's birthday honors, celebrated with a penalty, and then Mason Mount with a deflected header settled things up, and England walked off 2-1 victors. What's more important, Sean, that England won or that Marcus Rashford got an MBE?
Definitely Marcus Rashford getting his MBE. Yeah. No contest. The young man is an inspiration to a lot of youngsters who, as we all know, follow football avidly. And between him and Bukayo Saka, who's just done his GCSE A-levels and got 2 A-stars and 3 A's, what two marvellous young men, and something that we can be proud of.
What in the world does an MBE mean?
Member of the British Empire.
I know it means member of the Order of the British Empire, but, like, we don't have that stuff over here. So sometimes, one of you two explain that one to me. Why is it important?
That's because you've never had an empire, probably.
Yeah. Well, don't let them hear that. They might try and make one.
That's true.
If only we had listened to Rudyard Kipling when he told us that's what we should do.
No, it's sort of a precursor to a knighthood. It's just one of those things that you give your citizens to honor them. It's like one of your presidential medals.
So he gets to walk around. Now, I noticed that his Wikipedia page, which changed within hours to say Marcus Rashford MBE. But anyway, no, full credit to him. He's done a lot of great work with that, with the charity, with getting the lunch and free meals for underprivileged kids. And now with the Black Lives Matter and the anti-racism movement, with the Black History Month boots that he designed with Nike that he's trying to use to raise awareness and more charity work. So I really do want to commend him. But back to the field. Will, did you watch any of that game?
I can't say that I did. I mean, mostly because I don't care about the Nations League. It's a place that players go on break to get injured or get COVID. I mean, how can I care about the Nations League? It was made up 2 years ago to drum up interest in international football because they decided, oh, well, I guess these friendlies that we're playing, no one comes to. And now no one's just going to come to a competition. It's kind of like the summer tournaments.
I guess even better, Will, because we have friendlies before the Nation League games as well, just to make matters even more complicated and disinteresting.
Yeah, I don't understand. I know that for World Cup qualifying in March and September, UEFA added an extra game day in the international slots. But that's for World Cup qualifying. I don't understand why they're playing this tournament in the first place, given the fixture congestion for domestic leagues. and the dire straits that most domestic leagues are in financially right now, it seems incongruous that you would want to take time away from that to play this tournament, which only cursory has some impact on World Cup qualifying. It seems even more incongruous that you would want to add an additional friendly to this program, because that just seems like another useless way for people to get injured. And if you look at the starting lineups, that most of the, like Germany definitely against Ukraine did not field an A team. I think you're right, Sean. If this was a World Cup game, I got to believe Harry Kane and Jadon Sancho and Raheem Sterling would have all been starting over the likes of Marcus Rashford and Mason Mount. I don't think your midfield would have included Declan Rice. It was nice to see those guys get a game, but, you know, and to be honest, I thought Belgium put out one of their stronger sides. I mean, they didn't hold back Lukaku. They didn't hold back Kevin De Bruyne. So full credit to them, but it wasn't like I didn't see either team necessarily pushing for a win. It was clear that both sides wanted to win it, but it lacked the intensity that I'm used to seeing in either a Euro Cup qualifying match or a World Cup qualifier. Certainly didn't have the intensity that you might see in a World Cup match. Maybe like that third place game that they played in 2018, but it was another competitive game to give them more rankings points so that you can run off and say England are now what, the third ranked team in the world possibly after this one. But we all know the Coca-Cola rankings are false. Stead, did you watch any of this? I think I temporarily lost Stead, but Sean, so why are we doing this?
I have no idea apart from the word greed, I would imagine. So UEFA are jealous of the money that FIFA make for the World Cup. So in their wisdom, they've decided to increase the... Now, let me get this right. What's the other one we play in? The Euros, I think, isn't it? The Euros, and I think... Whoever wins this Nation League gets through to the Euros, but they've now extended the Euros, I think, to 32 teams as well.
Wow.
In terms of the final count. And this is just purely greed to get more television money, to show more football on television. It's all a complete nonsense. Personally, I'm very tired of it. Yes, I did watch the game. I watched our friendly game, mainly because Bukayo Saka was making his debut. So that was great, although I only consider that to be half a cap. So unless Will knows more than me, you know, I have no idea why this thing's on, nor has anyone explained what happens if we beat Denmark, because we've got yet another bloody international game. I think we play on Wednesday evening. And I've got no idea what happens if we win. So, Will, do you have any idea? I certainly don't.
No, it's kind of like the students in my classes. I don't want to know, so I can't be bothered to look it up because there's nothing in it for me at this current point. You know, England may win. I mean, I think that it was really designed so that certain players could get an international trophy. I'm looking at you, England.
Yeah,
I mean, that's basically the one of the few reasons that I can agree. I can see the players agreeing to play in this. You know, maybe they'll get an international trophy and something that doesn't matter. Seems like the League Cup.
Yeah, it's like the League Cup of European trophies.
Yeah, which means it's completely useless. And can I just say that I'm on their wiki page at the moment, and it says quite clearly, mind you, they've written it, the competition largely replaces the international friendly matches previously played on the FIFA international match calendar. Well, no, it doesn't, because we had an international friendly two days before we had a Nation League game. So it doesn't make any sense.
Now,
well, I think the one thing that we can take from this international break is Scotland have now gone a full year unbeaten internationally, which I think this is probably the first time in their history that they've done that because they won yesterday.
Yes, and they are on to the playoffs to now qualify for the Euros. So they'll have yet another competitive fixture. My understanding of it was an effort to give smaller nations more competitive games because they found that, you know, they were only playing competitive games in qualification. So this gave the smaller nations a chance to play competitive games. You know what? We've done something like that, you know, because now the Europeans don't have international friendlies in non-qualification years. We've done the same thing over here, and we have our own version, the CONCACAF Nations League. And to a certain extent, it worked. Like, I think the ratings points that a team like Jamaica picked up helped boost their international standing enough that they qualified for the hexagonal, octagonal, whatever crazy thing they're going to call the final round of CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. And you know what? To be honest, I'm fine with that. I think that Jamaica is a team that has been there or thereabouts and deserves a legit shot to qualify because for so many years based on their – because the qualification pots over here are based on your position in the Coca-Cola rankings. Jamaica always ended up getting a short shaft because their rankings were low enough that they were always ended up in a group of death, largely because they were the team that created it. But I don't see the benefit for some of the larger nations. You know, it's good for teams like Kosovo and Albania and stuff like that, but I don't see the benefit for a team like England or Belgium or Germany or Switzerland. And I wonder if the thing to do would be just to say those teams that have qualified for two of the last three major tournaments are exempt from this competition and will make it what it should be, which is a lower level competition for the smaller teams that don't necessarily get to play a lot of competitive games. My feeling, though, on this, and I'll let Stead chime in now that he's back after I finish this. My feeling, though, is that without England, without Spain, without France, without Denmark, without Belgium, without Germany in that competition, you couldn't get broadcast rights for it, and that's what they're in for. There'd be no money. Who would pay to watch that? So, Stead, you there? Oh, he can't hear us. No worries. So, what do you think about that, Sean?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just reading up some more about this conference because it's making little sense. But so I agree with what you're saying that you know, potentially smaller nations, smaller teams, it gives them the opportunity to, you know, to play slightly better level, a better level of competition, and that's in a way that's only fair. But I'm looking at this tournament, this Nations League is biennial, so we already had the Euros postponed this summer because of COVID. I think they're playing that next summer. Is that right?
Yeah.
So I can't even see when they're going to play out whatever the end of the UEFA Nations League is going to be, because I presume that is not now, because they're obviously still playing games. When is the final supposed to be for all this? Do you know, Mike? Have you?
I believe that they will finish up with the last round of fixtures in November.
Oh,
and
right, okay.
And then the finals will be, the quote-unquote finals will be in the summer window. So that would be, what, the June window?
So before June the Euros.
Before the Euros would be my, what I would assume would happen would be that they would play it before the Euros. But, you know, you take a team like Scotland right now.
Yep.
Scotland is playing in the same, like Scotland, somehow, in, something that could only happen to Scotland, and Will, you'll totally agree with this. This is something that could only happen to Scotland. Scotland is playing in the same competition in two different years at the same time. If that makes any sense.
No.
They're,
no, it doesn't.
They're still playing out the qualifier because there was for the highest ranked teams in each of the leagues that did not qualify directly for Europe or for Euro for Euro 2020, there was a playoff. Now this was supposed to happen last March, but of course it didn't because of COVID. So they postponed it until this break, which is why Scotland. Scotland played a competitive match instead of a friendly. So they were in that. They played on October 8th. Scotland beat Israel on penalties. So that was like the tail end of the 2019-2020 Nations League. In the meantime, Scotland also has to play in this version of it, where yesterday they beat Slovakia 1-0. Hence, Wills, they've been unbeaten for a calendar year. So somehow Scotland, in a way that only happens to Scotland, and, well, to a certain extent Northern Ireland, has managed to play in the same competition in two different years.
Okay. I'm even more confused.
Yes.
You know, it's a confusing subject that doesn't get any clearer the longer you look at it. It's kind of like football financing.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Yeah, we've been at this for 22 minutes, and I'm certainly no clearer. Yeah.
Ben, you with us now?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yep. Now I can.
Oh.
You're back. Can you hear us?
All right. I'm back.
All
hey.
Right. Here we go. Maybe you can bring some.
Sorry about that.
Hey, Steph,
no worries.
Let's have a party.
I thought my disconnection, the one time I have tech issues would work in my favor, and I wouldn't have to speak about this craziness known as the Nations League. But I guess I came back in just a little bit too early.
Man, what are you talking about? I drew this conversation out as long as humanly possible just to force you to talk about it. Because if I'm going to have to talk about it, please believe you are. Stead, why are we doing this?
Well, I really don't know. I was actually flipping through Reddit, and I saw that I don't know if you guys already talked about this, but Arsene Wenger actually had a comment about Nations League and how, you know, he gets the idea behind it and he gets the feel for it. But I think his other point, too, was if you're trying to have more competitive games and more football to play, then just have more tournaments. And so what, you know, he cited the Copa America, how that takes place basically every year to every other year that there's not a World Cup. So he said, why can't there just be, you know, have a Euro every 2 years and a World Cup every 2 years? And I think because, you know, we're steeped in tradition and things like that, it seems like that would be, you know, blasphemous to say there should be a World Cup every 4 years. But you see, you know, the African Cup of Nations take place nearly every year. You see, CONMEBOL has the Copa America nearly every year. The CONCACAF, even though that's not even one of the major kind of like tournaments, but they have their Gold Cup, you know, almost every year that there isn't another major tournament to take place, such as the World Cup. So there's no reason why the Euros couldn't do the same thing. And I went, okay, that does make sense. So outside of the fact that we would miss games such as the compelling game of Gibraltar versus Liechtenstein like we had this weekend, I'm not sure that that's necessarily going to be a bad thing to have a UEFA – the Euros every 2 years or every year that there isn't a World Cup. You can even think about like the World Championships in track and field where they have
two in between every Olympic cycle. So I don't know. I'm just kind of shooting spitballs out there, but it seems like that would make sense if they're just simply trying to have more competitive games take place and eliminate the friendly.
Yeah, I like my idea better. Just let the smaller nations who don't regularly qualify for these tournaments play in this tournament and make it like a junior varsity version of the European,
right.
The Euro Cup. Almost like
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go for it.
I was just going to say that the African soccer, they actually have another international tournament that takes place solely for professional players that play in country. So it's not entirely out of the possibility they have like kind of like a sub-tournament that could be for the teams that they know they're rarely ever going to get a chance to play in a major tournament like the Euros or the World Cup. So you're seeing that you have local players who, you know, they may not get a chance to get a look at the big stage made so often because they're playing in their local leagues in Cameroon or in Ghana or in South Africa or something like that. And they have another tournament that's set up just for them where if you're based out of Europe, you got a European club, nah, you can't play in this tournament. This is totally for local players. And it doesn't get a lot of press on this side of the world. I happened to stumble across an article on Bleacher Report one day, but I thought it was a great idea. And so you actually kind of look at this in a similar manner as you were saying. Your idea is actually a good idea to make it something for smaller teams to get a tournament, you know, get it on TV, and maybe get some of your local players a chance to get some international exposure. Maybe they can sign a contract with a big club. So you never know.
I don't believe what we need is another. As much as I love them, I don't think we need another tournament another chance as much. And I do like it, but to see Belgium in something that we all have agreed doesn't really matter. And if you watch the game, they played like it didn't matter. If you watched France and Portugal, I don't think either one of those teams was going ever got out of second gear. They would have liked it if they won, but they were kind of going through it. You could see even Didier Deschamps trying to play around with stuff. He was using a slightly different formation, a diamond midfield, where he put Antoine Griezmann behind Kylian Mbappe and Olivier Giroud. Didn't really work for him, but you know, the coaches, the managers are treating these like friendlies. I want to get some game time. I want to see what works. I think, as both Sean and Will said, what we saw from England on Sunday was basically a B side and seeing what he's got, seeing if Marcus Rashford and Harry Maguire, or Sean likes to call him Captain Uzo, could still play. Seeing what you can get out of Mason Mount and some of the other guys before he goes. And I expect that we'll see even less on Wednesday. I mean, could you imagine Jose Mourinho's reaction if Gareth Southgate throws out Harry Kane against Denmark?
Yeah, he doesn't care if Eric Dyer plays much, though, does he?
Well, he doesn't really depend on Eric Dyer very much.
Yet it was Eric Dyer who gave away the penalty.
Correct.
But if this was a full starting lineup, it's tough to say if this was a game, if this was a World Cup game, if this was a final, if this was a semifinal, which is what, you know, to be honest, I think that's what his aspirations for this team are. We would have seen anything that resembled that lineup. So I could do without it. You know, I like that it's there, but I could do without it. Speaking of teams, Sean, you brought up a good point about the 2014 England national team that unceremoniously got dumped by the out of the World Cup at the group stage in a group that featured, what was it, Uruguay and Italy?
Yep.
How many of them are now looking for jobs?
So if you look at the 2014 World Cup squad, that, as you say, didn't fare particularly well at the World Cup, I think there are now five players from that team that are looking that are out of contract, that are looking for a new club, which is quite frightening when you think it's only 2014. That's only 6 years ago. And if you bear with me 1 second, obviously Jack Wiltshire was one of those players. Danny Welbeck's another one of those players. And it really is quite astonishing that, you know, and a lot of the, I'm not going to call them kids, but a lot of these players, some of them haven't even hit their 30s yet. So,
my question was going to be for you, how many members of the team that played would have gotten into Roy Hodgson's team for the 2014 World Cup?
Oh, well, of the Belgian starting lineup?
Yeah.
All of them.
Definitely. So you think this team could beat that team?
Yes, I do. Yeah. We didn't have. It was not only proven in 2014 at that World Cup, but more worryingly was definitely proven at the Euros, when if you remember we got knocked out by Iceland for our sins.
Actually, I think that Iceland game was the start of sort of this generation, which. You know, I'll put this out there to all three of you. I know how England likes to hate their team. And it's hard for England to really wrap their heads around and their arms around a national team. And I'm sure part of it is steeling yourselves against, you know, it's easy when you're an American because we've never been any good, so we're not expecting to be good. But I would say this is probably the 18 to 20 iteration of the English national team is as good as I've seen them as I can remember.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're winning games and they're competing. Let's not lie. Like the last tournament that they played in, the last real tournament, I understand that they finished fourth in last year's Nations League finals, but we've already established we don't care about that. Look, the last tournament that they played in, they reached the semifinals of the World Cup. It's been quite a while since you guys got to celebrate one of those.
A long time. Time for about 90... Oh, my God.
54 years.
Oh, how many?
1966.
No, it was last time we went. No, the last time we went, we got to a semifinal before this one, which was 90, Italia 90. That was it. That was the famous Gazza got suspended.
And if you actually won a game on penalties?
That might be the last time we won a game again on penalties, which was against Cameroon in the quarterfinals. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you won a game. Then what was it? Colombia.
I was talking about the 1990 World Cup. Sorry, where we beat Cameroon on penalties, and then, as per usual, Germany stuffed us. Last time, you're right. I think it was Colombia. They were in our group, weren't they? Who beat us in the semi? Was it not Croatia?
It was Croatia.
It was Croatia in the semis. England scored early, and then it was quite depressing as Croatia scored twice. Win the game.
Yeah.
But outside of...
But entirely expected.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And there's that good, snarky British sense of defeatism that I was looking for this evening.
I mean,
that's
how can
why
I...
we can't have nice things.
Well, I mean, how can I enjoy an England team that hasn't won anything since 1966? My mother was born in 1966.
My dad was at the final.
You know,
my dad was there doing a Congo, celebrating, lucky bastard. He was the only one that has seen us win anything, I think. Bless him. But not that he's with us anymore. But anyway, at least he got to see us win then. And just think about it, if we'd had goal line technology, we might never have won a bloody World Cup had we had goal line technology in 1966.
Well, there's an argument against VAR. But we don't know what they're going to do in the Euros. Spain is starting to look strong. The Dutch are on their way up. Even the Portuguese team played against France looks miles different than the one that won the Euros back in 2016. I mean, who'd have thought that they actually have something that resembles an attack outside of just one Cristiano Ronaldo with Bruno Fernandes and João Felix in there. But
they're also the holders of the UEFA Nations League, apparently.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. One more international trophy for Cristiano Ronaldo to rub in Lionel Messi's face.
Yeah, that means he's got two more than Messi now.
No, I think that, well, do you want me to give you my honest prediction about England?
Yes.
For the next 5 to 6 years, they'll be perennial quarter and semi-finalists, and they won't win anything. And I think that Gareth, it's very much to do, unless they get rid of Gareth Southgate and his sort of conservative strategy behind playing the England team, you know, these young players are going to go through their primes trying to win something and not winning anything because, yeah, we saw them beat Belgium in a conservative game. But, you know, we watched England play conservatively against Croatia in the last World Cup, and they beat us because we scored early and then we tried to sit back and win the game. It's not how these players could play. They play in a high-paced league. They try and score goals for their teams, and then you're telling them, okay, now just defend it. That's inviting the team to lose. So that's what I think.
So who would you have?
My sad British pessimism coming back to bite me.
So who would you have instead of Southgate?
Well,
Big Sam.
I mean,
Big Sam.
You know, let's get Big Fat Sam in there. No, I mean, you need a younger manager. Well, Southgate's a young manager, but you need a young manager that buys into the new strategy of attack is the best form of defense. And you need a manager that's sort of versed in playing at a top level, because Gareth Southgate's not really versed in playing at a top level. You know, if England can convince Eddie Howe, I know that Eddie Howe got Bournemouth relegated last season, but if England can convince Eddie Howe to take up the job, Bournemouth was an attacking team. Bournemouth was a young team that was exciting and had potential. They just didn't have any funds. England is a young team that is exciting and has potential and doesn't need funds. It's got nationality as its fund. So if they can get Eddie Howe to come in and start playing attacking football, I think that England could come up with a trump and win. But
hey,
I don't think that will happen.
Hey, Stead, do you know what I wouldn't give to be complaining about the fact that the U.S. men's national team only made it to quarterfinals and semifinals of an international tournament?
I've been slowly, you know, if I hear another one, we haven't won anything since 1966. I've been sitting there going, you know what, man, at least you won one. And you've been to a couple of semis, maybe. It's actually not as bad as you may think it could be.
Yeah.
But I could imagine, though. I think, you know what, though? You got to think. I give England a pass in this way, because just imagine if USA basketball had the record that England did for soccer, even though the game was grown and popularized here. Yeah. So I'm kind of like, it might be 100% equitable, but I can kind of see where they're coming from here.
Yeah, but I get it, but it's like, man, it could always be worse.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could be hoping
Quinn Dempsey makes a comeback.
Yeah, but frankly, guys, winning the World Cup in 1966, right? A, there won't be many people alive soon who actually were alive when England won the World Cup. And it's a little bit like Preston North End bragging about the fact that they won three league titles back in 1878.
Right.
Who cares?
Yeah. Like Spurs fans still brag about winning the double.
Yeah, we'll do another one of those, Ted. Don't you worry. We'll do another one.
So, yeah, I'm surprised that we managed to figure out how to talk this long about the Nations League. But let's turn our attention. There was a big story that came out yesterday, and probably even bigger than the England story.
Yeah.
Was Project Big Picture. Now, before I even go into that, Sean,
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In the words of the immortal Vince Lombardi,
mm-hmm.
what the hell is going on out there? Why does everything have to be a project? We have Project Restart. Now we've got Project Big Picture. Why can't y'all just do something and not call it some sort of big project?
Because we're very good at sitting down and having cups of tea and talking a lot about things over here. See, that's one of our.
Have you never heard about the British builder?
The great British trait, the great British builder, basically. Yeah. Oh, he's putting a cover on. No, all joking apart, it's quite interesting because as the United Kingdom comes out of these 7 months of COVID, the government having sort of basically put money in and kept people in work now for quite a long time, we're suddenly realising that not only are we skint, not only are we going to probably have to pay larger taxes for the next 20 years, football is potentially, almost on its knees. The longer we go on without the clubs bringing in income, and I'm talking about clubs at the lower level, so League One, League Two clubs, but not only League One and League Two, but, there are about another 20 leagues underneath that. So this is just the way that the Premier League are proposing, because that's where all the cash is. We all know that. This is a way of the Premier League at least getting some of those funds that are coming in from the TV money down to that lower level. I have to say I'm at a stage now where I don't know whether, I think we're the only club in the whole of Europe to have as many professional teams. And obviously those went down from 92 to 91 when we lost Bury last season. And I don't know whether it's sensible to continue with that. I mean, I'm now becoming old and I'm quite traditionalist in the sense that I'd like to see the current structure stay in place. But maybe economically it's not possible. I mean, we don't know how long we're going to have to play football in this country without spectators. And what I find very annoying is how have the Germans found a way of getting 16,000 spectators? Was it Leipzig had 16,000 spectators at their home game a couple of weeks ago? And I just don't understand how we can't put some measures in place to at least allow people to start going back. Having said that, the rate of infection is increasing. So I can totally see why the government is standing firm at the moment.
So, Stead, did you read about Project Big Picture?
Yeah, I did. What I found odd was how, some of the team, I mean, granted, it seems like something that's very long-term, and I'm seeing it's being put forth as something that's going to really help the lower leagues. I'm wondering what I guess there's now a big nine as far as the teams are concerned, where you have, I'm sorry, Sean, my sound was cutting in and out. I didn't get everything you said, but it sounds like you have the Big Six plus Everton, Southampton, and West Ham. And I'm wondering, though, is West Ham, I can understand being another club that should be involved in this as far as having a little bit more voting rights. But you look at Southampton going, I guess they have had a long run in the Premier League versus maybe some of the other clubs, but you got to wonder how Newcastle is going to feel about something like this, considering that they've been a team that's competed for trophies before in the Premier League. So, it's easy to look at it as something that's positive to help the lower leagues. But again, we're getting a very small sampling, I think, of what the bigger plan is, because as we've seen with, so I don't know if you mentioned this or not, but you've seen the way they're charging now £15 to just watch a Premier League game. You know, the almighty pound is what's going to be running any future decision that they make. So again, it's one of those things too, where you're going, okay, let's let this kind of percolate a little bit and see what this turns into. Because you have to know, there's no way some of the bigger clubs are going to want to give themselves less power. If anything, they want to be giving themselves more power. So, I don't know. It's one of those let's wait and see what this turns into.
Okay, so there are two issues at play. I'm going to rewind a little bit. Project Big Picture is a proposal spearheaded in large part by Manchester United and Liverpool. Hey, Will, it's the first time that our two clubs ever got along on anything.
Yeah, and it's because of questionable management.
And so, basically, Liverpool and Man United put their heads together in an effort to figure out a way to screw everybody else. It's the one thing that they're both good at. That would see the main points of this is it's a way to give the major points involve giving a significant share of the Premier League TV revenue to the lower league EFL sides. So 25% of the upcoming revenue would go down to the EFL, would get a 25% cut, which is 21% more than they're getting right now, which is 4%. In addition, there would be automatic investment of £250 million going down to the EFL sides immediately, which Rick Perry has basically said is necessary if these lower league teams in the championships, League One, League Two, and down beyond the 370 billion levels of the English football pyramid are going to survive even until January. In exchange, the Premier League would be decreased from 20 teams to 18.
Yeah.
There'd be two automatic relegation spots. And then the 16th team would enter into a playoff with the third, fourth,
Germany.
Fifth teams in the championship to see if there would be a third relegation. And the voting would be changed from what now is one club, one vote to concentrated in the hands of the big six squads, Chelsea, Arsenal, Liverpool, Manchester United, Man City, and Tottenham. And the three teams that have been in the Premier League the longest, which right now is Everton, Southampton, and
West Ham.
All right, so that's where West Ham gets into this because they've had the one of the longest tenures in the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean it's an interesting proposal and an interesting discussion, and you know it's quite funny that it's the big. You know, the big clubs, Manchester United and Liverpool, in the Premier League that are pushing this forward. And the Premier League itself doesn't want this to happen. And the analogy I'll give you it's the devil you know versus the devil you don't. Because you know the Premier League and you know the Football League and you know how they hate each other and they're competitive. And you know that split happened in 1992, basically over TV deals. The first division of English football, the teams in the first division of English football, basically did a project big picture back in 1992 and said, let's make this whole other thing where we're the best and then we negotiate with the EFL. And the EFL thought, well, this idea of Sky Sports presenting football will die and fail. So they didn't think that the Premier League was going to flourish because they didn't think that football and television would work out. And now we're into a new era, basically, because football on television is going to die because television is going to die. And that's basically what this Project Big Picture is about. It's these owners of these clubs realizing that traditional television, you know, buying a cable, buying a Sky Sports box, buying that is going to fail because it's too expensive. And what they're banking on is the ability to brand their own streaming devices on their own websites. Because you know, currently part of Project Restart, one of the most telling parts about it is it gives the teams Project Big Pictures is it gives the teams the ability to sell six games on their site, on their streaming site, so to their streaming service. So Liverpool will be able to say, okay, you want to watch the Liverpool-Manchester City game, you want to watch the Liverpool-West Ham game, you want to watch the Liverpool-Everton game, you're going to have to purchase LFC TV. And you're going to have to watch it on that. And with the way that the Project Big Picture is set up, as was pointed out by the director of the Premier League, with these big six, with this big nine sort of setup, only six of them have to agree to push something through.
Mm-hmm.
That number will go from, you know, six games to 12 games to 18 games and then to 34 games. So, you know, by and large, eventually, what this Project Big Picture means for the fans is, yes, there will be less ticket pricing for away fans, and that's great, but they will have to choose the team they're supporting and buy that streaming service, or buy 20 or 18 different streaming services, because we know that, you know, clubs won't cooperate on that.
Well,
so if you want to watch just Liverpool, that's perfectly fine for you. But if you want to watch Liverpool, Manchester United, Manchester City, and Everton, good luck. That's four different streaming services you're going to have to pay for.
You have to look at it, though. I mean, I totally see that scenario because it's already happened in other sports. You're looking at what happened with the UFC and how their own particular platform was not quite strong enough to handle what they needed, so they kind of did this partnership with ESPN. But you're looking at control of distribution because, yet, as you said, Celestial Cable is going out the door. And in fact, I don't know about you guys, but most of the quote unquote television that I consume is through my computer or through my my streaming compatible device that I have attached to my television. So yes, that's going out the window. What concerns me is, you know, while the possibility is there for each team to have their own streaming service, you have to be concerned with the number of actual, like, how much revenue they're actually going to get versus a more universal service. Or even one that, because I bet they could. It's all about how much can they charge. And instead of having 34 streaming services, I could easily see there being a Premier League stream service that would be definitely considerably more expensive than each individual team streaming service. But it'll be another thing that people have to pay for. Because if you look at what the streaming is happening here in the United States, you can have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 different streaming services and cut your cable and probably end up spending more than you would for cable. But again, you're only having things that you want to watch versus cable where you have 97 to 100 channels that you're never going to look at it for the rest of your life. So, yeah, I agree with Will. I totally see that being the avenue that this would go into as far as, you know, because it's all about control of distribution of product and how much they can charge for control of distribution of product. They probably have loads and loads and loads of consultants there telling them how much could they actually charge and reach particular bottom lines that they want, because that's more important than the number of eyes that are actually on the product.
I think, though, the big thing is, number one, this won't happen because the best analogy I saw was it's like getting turkeys to vote for Thanksgiving, right? In order for this to go through, you would have to have the vote of 14 of the 20 Premier League teams where only 9 of them are going to really have a say. So basically you're telling me right now 5 teams at a minimum would have to vote for nothing, a loss of control. I do think that it's a negotiation point. It's a starting off point. Here's our first proposal. What are you going to come back with? Rick Perry has been very clear about the fact that the EFL needs money. And, Sean, you can talk to this more than anybody else because you're there. Those teams are dying, and they need money, and they need it fast. And possibly the only way that you're going to get that out of the Premier League teams is to give up something that they want. Well, is it that Liverpool, Man United, Man City, Arsenal, and Chelsea all want other than for Tottenham to lose? It's power. They want control.
They want more control. They want more control, yeah.
And one thing that they can do is negotiate. Since they can't negotiate like Major League Baseball teams can, their own local television distribution, which is something that's unique to this part of the world, they can negotiate streaming revenues, right? Because you think about it, anything that Man United generates from MUTV, they keep. Anything that Liverpool generates from LFC TV, they keep. It makes sense that they would want to negotiate for the ability to stream these games and get that revenue in. I don't see, though, where it's going to be necessarily palatable unless they go to an only streaming mechanism where you can only stream these games, which you could be right. You know, Celestial Cable is going by the way of the dodo, and more people are putting together the packages. But you're right that they're going to have some sort of Premier League package that will enable people to stream all the games. I wouldn't put it past Man U, Liverpool, and the other teams to want more control over a bigger piece of the pie. They're looking for money. We've been talking around about this, and again, yet another symbol, another sign that I feel that we're heading closer and closer to a European Super League. Because if you think that when these clubs get this amount of power, that Barcelona, Real Madrid, AC Milan, Inter Milan, Juventus, who already have way less control over negotiations for television contracts than the Premier League clubs, are going to be looking at this and saying, all right, I see what you did there. You're lying to yourself. So, I mean, that's just my two cents. Sean, what has been the reaction over there to Project Big Picture?
I don't think that it's hit the news as much as it could have hit the news. Does that make sense? So I was in my local news agent yesterday, and I didn't really notice that there was much in it in the newspapers, so to speak. So I'm not sure that people have yet latched onto it. I'll tell you what my fear is, and it's slightly different fear. So if you look at the 9 clubs that are being mentioned, so obviously the top 6 plus the ones that have been in the Premier for a little while. I was just trying to work out how many of those are American owned. So we've got Liverpool, we've got Man U, we've got Arsenal, Chelsea obviously not, Man City are owned by the Qataris, and Tottenham, who's Joe Lewis, isn't it? Who ironically is English. I just have a very nasty feeling that this could also be heading not only in terms of redistribution of money, but towards a no relegation scenario, like you guys have in the States.
Well, that's always been the thing. Is I think that those teams not only want to get away from the threat of relegation, they want the European Super League so that they don't have to worry about finances. Business loves consistency. We have talked about it with regards to MLS. There's a lot of people who would love relegation in MLS. And on the surface, it sounds like a great plan. Oh, the excitement, relegation battles, you know, at the end of the season, you're glued to your TV to see if they're going to score that last goal to make the great escape. But for investment, if I'm coming in and investing in a club, be it as a sponsor or an owner, I'm looking for consistency. I want guaranteed returns on my investment, so I'm not having to spend above the odds to either try and get up or
That's the mess we're in. That's exactly the mess we're in, Mike. You've got a bunch of clubs who get into the Championship, who see the lure of the money that's being made in the Premier League at present, and they gamble. And they gamble to try and get in there. And if they don't get in there, so I'm thinking of Derby in particular, if they don't get up, then they've got big problems on their hands because they will have overspent in terms of the money they can generate, particularly in the Championship, is nowhere near what they can generate in the top league. I mean, have Aston Villa not had to spend $100 million each transfer window? Like, as in the one before COVID and the one this summer? And is that going to guarantee them that they'll stay up this season?
Well, right now, the figures I saw was 107% of revenue. The
is being spent.
Championship teams are spending 107% of their guaranteed revenue on salary.
Yeah.
Which you're automatically operating at a loss.
Yeah.
And the chairman of Leighton Orient said, like, 5 or 6 weeks before we start to see the beginnings of the collapse of the lower divisions.
Yeah.
I don't see how without this. So, again, to make it work. So that's the one thing. Like, there is a dire situation in the lower divisions without fans for teams. And you've talked about the local club in –
ironically, we're okay here in Exeter because they very cleverly put a sell-on clause in the Ollie Watkins contract when they sold him to Brentford. So suddenly they've got £3 million just come in for the fact that he's gone to Aston Villa for £30 million. So Exeter will be fine. Yep.
And that's kind of the lucky one for them, but...
Yeah, but they might have no one to play in about 5 weeks.
Yeah.
There might not be any clubs in their division anymore.
And I had said before, and you've heard me, that I didn't think by the end of 2020 that there would be 92 available professional teams in England. We've already seen Wigan go into administration, although they've accepted a bid, so it looks like they'll be safe.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen Bury go out of business. You know, some of these clubs that have great histories, these great local clubs are in. So there needs to be an influx of cash. The only place the cash can come is from the Premier League because they're the only ones that have it right now.
Yeah.
The only way that you're going to get the cash out of the Premier League is to give something up. My question is then, if you're not going to go with big picture, where do they go from there? This is, if we say this is the first offer in a negotiation that has to be settled within a couple of weeks, and we can talk about the fact that they won't be able to do it because we remember Project Restart and how long it took for them to nail that one down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are they going to have to give up? I think it's going to be more control over the streaming rights.
I think that Project Big Picture has such enticing things just littered throughout it for teams. You know, teams are saying there's too much, there's fixture congestion. So top league, 18 teams, less fixture congestion. Teams are saying there's fixture congestion. There's no more EFL Cup. There's no more Community Shield. Those are gone. Those are good things for top teams. So those are things that are nice. There's also good things for lower tier teams because it gives them control over their players' salaries. There are going to be salary caps included in Project Big Picture. So the top tier teams aren't going to be able to just say, okay, I want Lionel Messi. I'll pay him £1 million a week. Or I want Ollie Watkins. I'll just bump your salary up to £30,000 a week, Ollie. Good luck keeping him, Brentford. I know you can't afford that. So there are some good controls on players and agents that are thrown in with a big picture. So I think that those are, like, the carrots. I think that what big picture will have to sacrifice is this idea of, you know, only six need to approve something. I think they're probably going to have to give something along the lines of, the top 12 teams each have a vote. Because that takes away power from the yo-yo clubs, as they seem to be trying to do. But it also gives a wider sense of, you know, Now there won't just be the American-owned or foreign-owned clubs that are going to control our league. So I think that might be something that they're going to have to give up.
What do you think of all of this, Ted?
I think it just shows the mess that professional sports have become. I mean, when you reach an audience that has disposable income and funds, it makes for, you know, it makes for clubs and organizations to try and maximize the amount of revenue that their product can generate. And right now, the Premier League is basically generating the number one product in the world when it comes to professional soccer. So it is something that you could see get to the point where how you're seeing some of these stadiums where they have outpriced the common fan. They've outpriced the guy who works all week just because he's looking forward to going to or watching the game this weekend because that's his outlet. So when you're seeing more and more of a separation from the professional league to the people who support the most, I feel like that's what you're talking about, you know, teams and leagues losing their soul. And I was watching something about ultras around the world. And, you know, of course, the common definition of a lot of these fan organizations that kind of fall under that moniker is something that's not very positive. It tends to be very, very overtly antagonistic in the way they treat their own and opposing teams and players and things like that. But there was also the side of it where you're talking about how they, like, these clubs and these fan groups have supported the club through positive and negative times. I remember there was a guy who was a kind of like the head of the ultra group for a small club in France, and they had their own section of the stadium where they were allowed to go and sit. And it wasn't necessarily a primary section of the club, of the stadium, but it was something that they knew they would go, and that was kind of like that was their fun for the week. That was their outlet. And he was talking about how they're getting forced out because of the cosmopolitan nature that's becoming professional sports, and how the people who love these teams the most are being set aside because it's something now that the more elite can just sort of do in their spare time. And on over on this side of the pond, I mean, I know you've seen that as well with a lot of professional sports over here where, you know, going to a game that is a high caliber game, you're not going to see the fan that bleeds for the team. You're going to see someone else who probably has a corporate ticket and is just going for the experience, or they have a date, or they just trying to look for something to do that weekend. So, you know, that's kind of where it concerns me the most, because we can go a million different directions with what we think these types of plans are going to do to the club and make accessibility more difficult. But you would hope, though, that the general goal should still be to distribute your product to as many people as possible. And as that is, seems like that's suddenly not the primary goal anymore, where the primary goal is to, of course, maximize profit. So it's concerning in that way, but to say that I am, like, really, 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 like abreast of the situation, I know I have a strong feeling about what I think this is becoming. I'm not quite there yet, but to say that the average fan shouldn't be concerned in a way, I think that's definitely not what I'm trying to say. I'm kind of thinking about kind of the way they've done with how the some of the teams have really gone after some of the fan outfits. I'm mainly thinking of like ArsenalFan.tv, where the club itself has really been quite negative of that, and they've gotten the pundits on TV to also speak against them, when really it's exactly what it is. You have this kind of like, it's not too dissimilar to what we're doing here. Just, you know, you have a group of guys who support a team and they just want to be able to talk about it. So you know, you got to hope that professional sports isn't going to be something that is going to be kind of like disappeared for those who really look to professional sports as their personal outlet.
Well, we are in the midst of probably one of the most fundamental shifts in professional sports. You know, we went through the global recession of the late aughts and early teens, but we still rebounded from that.
Mm-hmm.
This time, you know, we have clubs that are going to go out of business. We have potential entire leagues that are going out of business. We talk about the mm-hmm. fact that the lower tiers of English football are suffering, but we shouldn't act like that is happening in a vacuum, because if the lower divisions, if the championship, if League One, League Two, the North Conference North, if they're all suffering, do you really think that's not happening in Spain, in Italy,
mm-hmm.
in
mm-hmm.
Germany, in places
Germany.
Like that. So it's happening all across Europe. We're dealing with that to a certain extent here in the States, although the closed franchise model has exempted some of it. We still have franchises that are not making money because they can't have fans in the stadium. We're going to see a radically different NFL or NHL, NBA, probably a radically different Major League Baseball next year as they cope with the losses from this year. This could be one of the most fundamental shifts in sports. We could be looking at some serious, serious contraction. Now, being as how football is probably the most open in terms of how many teams there are, how many different leagues, how many different systems there are, it's going to be the most stark when we look at it in Europe. But we could see, I think, the big story here is I think this is the beginning of a fundamental shift, not only in how they distribute games, the teams that have control, the finances. You're making what could be considered a devil's bargain, giving up that level of control to teams that have been looking for additional control. That's always been the big issue with them is, you know, how can we – it started with the Champions League. How could they – how could teams like Manchester United negotiate with the – what is it? The European Super Clubs, whatever that conference of the big 19 teams that negotiates with UEFA for over the Champions League qualification rules. They're looking for ways to ensure that they get in every year. We've talked about the fact that they're – I think they're itching for a European Super League. You know, why wouldn't you? If you think that you can broadcast well now playing in the Premier League, imagine if you had a 19-team European Super League where you were playing once or twice a week and every game was the equivalent of Barcelona and Liverpool.
Yeah, I'm not sure that that's what the British football viewing public want. And I'm only basing this on me talking to my pals, you know, both locally, in the business that I'm in, etc. People would rather watch Liverpool play Brighton in a key Premier League game than they would want to watch Liverpool play Barcelona or Sparta Prague
or Juventus,
Valencia or whoever. The other thing is fans, you know, what do you expect fans to fork out thousands of pounds each time these games are played to fly over and stay in hotels in cities across Europe? I can't see it. I mean, I can see the allure of it, but I don't think the reality of it is as, you know, as financially beneficial as the clubs think.
I think the one thing, though, that we've talked about, though, is this. The last thing that they care about is us.
Yeah, okay, I agree with that.
The fans. You know, it's the corporate sponsors, it's the money, it's the guaranteed revenue. And if there's one thing that they have learned from COVID, and they being the owners of any team, now we can't guarantee gate revenue. So we need to do everything we can do to guarantee our profits before we open door number one.
Yeah.
You know, that is the one advantage that the NFL has over just about any other league in the world right now, is the fact that their biggest single expenditure, salaries, is all but guaranteed off the television revenue. So their biggest single expenditure is guaranteed already. Your salary cap is that proportion of the revenue that you get from the TV contract each year. That's guaranteed. Now you don't have to worry about that. Anything else you make on top of that is gravy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the European clubs would love that kind of certainty. And they have to believe, would they get as much? Maybe not. But are we going to suddenly stop watching Liverpool, Arsenal, Man United, because their games are against Juventus, not Brighton?
Well, you guys won't over there, because if you've got that stream and you can get that on whatever TV channel you can get over in the US, that's fine. I'm talking more about what makes football what it is. So we haven't got the fans. We know what a big problem that is already. But then to ask them to travel to Europe every other week, by the way, we're not in Europe anymore. They might not even let the English teams, the English fans, go to Europe.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because of whatever new arrangements are going to be made after Brexit. So it's, you know, it's all a mess, isn't it, really? And by the way, how big are you going to have this European League? You know, in this negotiation, they're talking about dropping the number of teams in the Premier League to 18 teams. Which 18 teams are you going to have a European League?
I'm sure you can come up with 18. I think
and then we'll be English.
I can pick a six.
I think that the point Sean is making is very good. I think that while the appeal of the Super League is great, especially because you know you can guarantee TV revenues, I don't think it would work in the European market, because the reason that clubs like Liverpool have such rabid fan bases are because of people from Liverpool. You know, there is a massive market for Liverpool around the world, but that's only because it was a market built on such an ideal. And if Liverpool loses that ideal, I don't think that the team would be the same, and I certainly wouldn't support it. And, you know, I know that it wouldn't be as supported over in England, because, you know, I think that they're losing track of fans' morals. And, yes, the fan could watch Liverpool play Juventus and beat Juventus, or Liverpool play Barcelona and lose 4-0 for a corner taken quickly from Messi. But I don't think that I think after about 8 weeks of that, people will just say, okay, I want to go back and I want to watch Liverpool play Aston Villa, and you know, maybe 1 in 100 times Aston Villa will beat Liverpool, and maybe 1 in 10,000 times Aston Villa will win 7-2. You know, I think that's what Premier League fans want, and like fans across England at least want. So I think I completely agree with you there, Sean.
Sorry to interrupt you there 1 second. Did you say what percentage of times Aston Villa would beat Liverpool? 1 in 10,000, did you say? So did we actually
1 in 10,000 times Aston Villa beat Liverpool?
Did we watch a very historical moment then a couple of weeks ago?
I think it was an extremely historical moment for Aston Villa to beat Liverpool 7-2.
Okay.
I mean, it was. I think it's the biggest loss that Liverpool's had as a club. So. It's historic, and it didn't come to Manchester United. Didn't come to Manchester City. Came to a team that I had relegated.
Yeah.
Well, I will say though, in Project Big Picture, the fans did get something. If you read down a twenty pound cap on away tickets, and think it was like a certain percentage of the ground dedicated to away fans, up to 3,000. And the return of safe standing, should the government permit it. So they even threw a few nuggets in there for the fans as well.
Just sweetening it for fans so that they'll pressure their clubs. I mean, you know.
Well, I think what you said was everybody got a little bit of something out of it. We know that whatever agreement they reach will not be perfect, but we know at the same time that they need to reach an agreement, because let's not forget the major issue in all of this is the sustained viability of the lower leagues, not just in England, but in countries throughout Europe, who are going to be suffering. We haven't seen anything like this from Germany or Italy doesn't mean it's not happening. It just means that it hasn't come across our radar.
Well, they've allowed fans back in Germany, haven't they? So that must be somewhat easing the financial burden. But we might have just wasted the last 20 minutes, because if you check on the BBC site and go to the gossip column, you'll notice it's got the tomorrow's back page headline, which says "Splitting Mad: Big Picture Plan Set to Fail with Division and Anger Between Premier Clubs and Secret Talks."
Oh well, we didn't waste the last 20 minutes because we said at the top that we didn't think that this was going to work, because you would need to get 14 of the 20 teams to vote for it.
Right. Correct.
And they weren't going to.
No, it doesn't look as though that one's going to happen. So they're going to have to come up with another plan pretty bloody quickly.
So,
don't worry, we'll get a new project going.
What are we going to call this one?
Yeah.
Why don't we call this one Project Little Picture?
Why don't we call Jeff? Just give him all the TV rights. He's the richest man on the planet, isn't he? And just say, come on, Jeff, bail us out here. We'll give you all the TV rights. Everyone can watch it free on Amazon for the rest of their lives.
I saw another thing where, Sean, they're putting games on pay-per-view over there.
Which league is this we're talking about?
The Premier League will be putting games on pay-per-view to make up
for... That's right, because there was a promise made in September, I think, that this happened after games were allowed back in June to finish off last season. So they made a promise to show every game, and it looks as though they're going to relinquish that. They are talking pay-per-view, and they're talking something like £15 or £14.95 per game.
Per game?
Yeah.
Per game.
Per game. Yeah. So
£14. £15 per game.
About $22.
I'm not even going to do the conversion, because I'm just thinking about whether or not I would consider paying $15 to watch a Manchester United game when I'm not willing to pay $7 a month for CBS All Access to watch the Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
That's very good.
Yeah.
And that would give me access to
And if you're willing to watch it in Spanish, it's free.
Yeah. And so that was on my radar for next week, was my rant on the fact that CBS is not going to live televise any of the Champions League games in the group stages. It looks like they're going straight streaming for that. And how bitter I was about that, but I'm going to save that wholesale rant for next week, because I actually have to have something to talk about. And being as how I might get saddled with another Manchester United loss to Newcastle at 3 p.m. on Saturday, I was trying to save up something that I could then take all of that excess aggression out on. So I'll leave that for next time. Gentlemen, we are up against it. So I want to give a big shout out first and foremost to producer Paul, who will be, he has said that he wants to take some of his life back. So he's going to be taking a step back from hosting the show. We want to appreciate him. When Stead and I started doing this, who knows how long ago, there's only one clown that was stupid enough to get involved with this. So I appreciate all the time and effort that you've given us, Paul, because Lord knows I wouldn't have sat around for listening to us talk for this long. I'm part of the show and I don't like listening to us talk that long. So big shouts out to producer Paul. Gentlemen, it's that time. Parting words of wisdom as we hit the end of this fine evening. We'll go age before beauty. So, British Will, since you are the youngest and ugliest.
That's a bit harsh. The youngest bit, I meant.
Parting shots, Will. Don't waste your time looking at the Nations League. It's not a proper European competition. No matter what any Portuguese fan will tell you. Don't waste your time looking into Project Big Picture, because it's just another ploy for massive corporations to steal your money. And, you know, like all of you, I can't wait to start watching the Premier League again, despite having mixed feelings about the league after a certain game that happened last Sunday.
Hey, just be happy, Will, that we didn't have you on last Monday and you have to go through that. Like, you noped out and said, I got class. I had to sit here for 90 minutes listening to Sean instead and Carlos crow about how badly we lost.
It was great.
I know y'all have fun. I'm just saying.
I hope they enjoyed it, because their team certainly haven't won anything recently.
Ooh, shots fired.
Just the FA Cup, but that's fine. Let's not get into the
FA Cup.
I
just ignored that statement.
Yeah.
They haven't won anything recently. Just
I will not accept a Liverpool fan taking any sort of sauce out of the FA Cup win, considering that I still get grief from my Liverpool fan friends about the 06 FA Cup. So unless you guys start talking about that win that you had a number of years ago, I'm going to gloat about every time Arsenal tends to win one. So we're even.
Yeah, but, I mean, did Arsenal win by your talismanic captain stepping up from having cramp to just absolutely rip one from about 35 yards into the top corner to make it 3-3 so that they could then go on to extra time? No, I don't think so. And then win on penalties? No, I don't think that's what happened. But, you know, go ahead and enjoy your FA Cup in 2020.
Oh, we did. All right. Don't worry about that.
John, your parting thoughts.
Yeah, I'm totally with Will. You know, let's just dump all this Nation League, whatever the bloody hell it is. I think the most depressing thing is that there's another international week coming up soon. And I hate the fact how the Premier League is broken up by these pointless international matches. Because as we've all discussed, England are probably never, ever going to win the World Cup anyway. So why the hell we try? I've got no idea. Yeah, thoroughly looking forward to the games at the weekend. What a game. Everton-Liverpool. First up on Saturday. And that's obviously going to be fascinating. So we have the Merseyside Invincibles against the Merseyside League Champions. So that's great. And then I'm also looking forward very much to seeing how we can set up against Mr. Guardiola now that there are actually some points at stake. So we gave him a good hiding in the FA Cup semi-final, but that was the FA Cup. This is the one that matters. And then I think a really intriguing game, and I wish there were fans there because there would definitely be some fighting going on. Spurs play West Ham on Sunday. And I'm thoroughly looking forward to that. And there's another interesting one, isn't there, with Leicester playing Villa. Both those teams playing quite well. I can't wait for the Premier League to come back. There's my parting thoughts.
All right, Stead, what you got?
Yeah, I'm just going to piggyback on Sean. The Premier League this weekend is looking real, real, real nice. It's outside of Leicester Villa. That's going to be a good game. It's Spurs and West Ham. You got to look, Leeds and Wolves are playing, and Wolves have been on a little bit of the skid lately, but they, you know, the Wolves started off pretty slowly last year, too, before they came on and looked like a team that was competing for top four last year. So say what you want. That's also going to be a very strong, strong game. Leeds has looked really, really entertaining so far and looked like a team that's going to be formidable. So we'll see what's going to happen. That's another game to watch.
All right. Yeah, my parting thoughts. At the beginning of the biggest month of Mr. Solskjaer's managerial career. By this time next month, he will either still be the manager of Manchester United, or he will be out on his butt and Mr. Pochettino will be in. All right, so we had fun tonight. Thanks to producer Paul, London Sean, British Will, Stead. I'm Mike. This has been the Two Guys Soccer Show. We did all right this week. We'll try and do better next week. Take care and happy football.
Bye-bye.